What does possibility mean to you?
That's a hard question.
Something that you can strive for.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
You're confident in yourself and you believe in yourself. Stuff that you could achieve.
I feel excited. Anything is possible when you're more confident.
Shoes are a huge part of that. They are the most important part of my style.
You can like express yourself in the right shoes.
Anything is possible.
DSW, countless shoes at bragworthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Liberation Day, minus one. I go to Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics. He's in London. And Joe's column looks at what we're not watching right now, which is the Federal Reserve. And I'm keen for it because all eyes are on Liberation Day. What about the Fed? It's unusually quiet. I thought there was supposed to be a war between Chairman Powell and the President of the United States. I don't hear it. Joe, a very good evening to you. Your most recent column for the Wall Street Journal introduces me to a mystery I did not know existed. What is the Federal Reserve up to? It's supposed to be quantitative tightening, having followed years of quantitative easing. It's supposed to be watching the data very closely. But you suggest that there's no easy explanation for why they've reduced the amount of mortgage-backed securities and other bonds that they are reducing their holdings with each month. There's no obvious explanation, but you have one. Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. Yeah, I think, unfortunately, we need to talk about quantitative tightening again. I know this is everyone's favorite economic subject, but it is coming back into focus because, you know, you'll remember a couple of weeks ago we had a regularly scheduled Federal Open Market Committee where they set policy. And the main announcement of that is that Chairman Jerome Powell and the board were going to keep interest rates where they are at the moment because they continue to be a little concerned about inflation not falling back to the 2% target as quickly as they would like. But buried in there was what at first seems like an esoteric statement about their balance sheet, which turns out to be pretty important. And so what they've been doing is quantitative tightening. They have been allowing a certain volume of the bonds that they accumulated during the quantitative easing phase to roll off the balance sheet each month. And what they are doing is slowing the pace at which they are going to reduce their holdings of treasury bonds. So, you know, they had been allowing $25 billion worth of bonds to roll off the balance sheet before every month. Now it's going to be $5 billion every month. And this is kind of a head scratcher because, you know, we're worried about inflation, and they seem to be concerned, rightly or wrongly, that Trump's tariff policy might also be inflationary. And clearly, they have not managed to get inflation back down to the 2% target themselves over the past couple of years. So you might well ask, why are they not using this extra policy lever of quantitative tightening to try to control price increases? And the answer is that they think that they are in kind of a financial regulatory pickle at the moment because they are now becoming concerned that if they reduce the balance sheet too much, it's going to start creating a lot of instability in the banking system. And I think that this concern is an outgrowth of the fact that when they did quantitative easing, they jumped into it without really understanding how it was going to transform the financial system in America. And now they are stuck in the situation where if they try to reverse that easing policy because we have inflation, they keep bumping up against various financial stability problems.
You report that something changed profoundly in these last years. The dramatically increased quantity of reserves that commercial banks deposit at the central bank. Is that because of the Great Recession of 2008-2009, they no longer trusted the banks to maintain adequate reserves? Why did they make that change?
Well, so the way that the financial system had worked before 2008 is that, banks have certain regulatory requirements for liquid reserves that they would deposit at the Fed, but they were often allowed to meet those requirements by trading with each other in the overnight market. And in fact, the interest rate for those trades, the Fed funds rate, is the interest rate that the Fed tries to set. So what changed after 2008, and there were regulatory and other reasons for this, is that banks started wanting to hold much higher quantities of reserve deposits at the Fed than they ever had before. And one of the factors involved in this is that the Fed was creating more opportunities for banks to do this, because the way quantitative easing would work is that when the Fed bought a bond, that bond would show up on the asset side of the Fed's balance sheet. And then, of course, in basic double entry accounting, there has to be a liability somewhere. And that liability often involved then creating a cash deposit for in the bank's reserve account, the bank from which the Fed had bought the bond. And so this meant that, the Fed was feeding this huge accumulation of, banks' reserves at the Fed. And the thing that they're concerned about now is that this has really changed the way that a lot of Main Street banks operate, the way they manage their regulatory capital and the way that they manage risk on their own balance sheets. Clearly, they want to have more of these deposits at the Fed, but no one can say what volume in aggregate banks are going to want to keep on deposit at the central bank. And that is turning out to really constrain the Fed because, in order to reduce the asset side of its balance sheet through quantitative tightening, the Fed also has to come up with some way of reducing the liabilities. And it's looking like it's going to be very difficult to do that. And that might actually constrain the Fed's ability to do quantitative tightening without creating all of these instability problems, in the rest of the financial system. But meanwhile, we've got this inflation problem.
You want the Fed to tell us what they're doing. Is that something they've done before? Are they supposed to be transparent?
Well, I mean, a basic problem that is emerging in this discussion about the balance sheet is that no one can precisely say what's going on. So, the Fed announces at their meeting a couple weeks ago that they're slowing the pace of quantitative tightening. And in his press conference, Chairman Jerome Powell suggested that it is because they were concerned that they are reaching a point where they will dip below the level of bank reserves that ordinary Main Street banks want to hold at the Fed. Well, okay, but no one has ever really been able to estimate what that level is. And the Fed's own guesses based on its academic research keep ratcheting upward. There was an episode in 2019 where short-term interest rates spiked because it turns out that the Fed had guessed wrong and had allowed reserves to fall too low. But it's still difficult to say what the correct amount was. And the Fed also can't really say at this point what relationship it thinks there is between quantitative tightening and controlling inflation. So, Chairman Powell at his press conference suggested that they can slow the pace of quantitative tightening just as a technical matter of maintaining the financial plumbing, and that it won't have an effect on their ability to hit that 2% inflation target. But, come on, we said that they were doing the quantitative easing at the start of this because they wanted to ease financial conditions, and at that time their goal was to create some inflation. And now they're arguing that somehow, not shrinking the balance sheet doesn't have any impact on disinflation. So they have never really explained theoretically what they think is going on here. And they haven't even attempted to hint to the public what they think an appropriate size for the balance sheet would actually be.
In your column, there is a suggestion that the Fed believes we'll achieve that 2% gradually. Is that correct, that they have that confidence, and therefore we don't need to worry about tightening?
Well, this is one of the problems that we're starting to run into. If every 3 months, the Fed publishes its statement of economic projections. These are the dot plots that everyone hears about, where members of Federal Open Market Committee make guesses about where they think the inflation rate will be in 1 or 2 years, and what they think will be economic growth and the unemployment rate, and what they think will be the appropriate short-term interest rate to get there. And each of these guesses has been pretty consistently wrong. So they keep saying in their statements that they expect that inflation is going to continue to slow, and then it keeps not happening, and then they keep having to revise the time horizon at which point they think they're going to meet their 2% objective. And meanwhile, they leave out of that exercise any guess about the balance sheet or any assumption about the relationship between the balance sheet and inflation. So it is becoming a little difficult to understand what they themselves think is going on here.
And they're not being scrutinized by the administration. Is that a good thing, Joe, that Powell and his governors are free to be esoteric, independent of the give and take of the daily news?
Well, I think that one of the problems they've got is that they do feel potentially under a bit of political pressure from the Trump administration, just because President Trump himself is not shy about the fact that he would prefer much lower interest rates. And he doesn't think that Powell has done a particularly good job over the inflation cycle that we've had over the past few years. And, kind of my argument would be that I think that there are reasons to shield the Fed from some of the hurly-burly of political interference. But I think that the price of that has to be that the Fed has to be much more open with the public about what they're doing, particularly when we're talking about these very novel policy tools like quantitative easing and tightening that no one ever really voted for, and that was sort of done in the heat of the moment, starting in the 2008 panic and again during the pandemic, not always with an enormous amount of democratic scrutiny or accountability. I think that the Fed would do itself a favor, therefore, if it could really explain what it's up to.
Final question. Does the size of the balance sheet, is that a significant determination of the interest rates?
Well, the short answer is we don't know. Which will be very surprising to people because this has often been presented as an important monetary policy intervention in the economy. But the Fed has never been entirely, they have had different shifting explanations over the years for how they think quantitative easing worked, if it did work when they started it. And I'm not aware that they have really settled on any interpretation for, to say, well, if we shrink the balance sheet by $100 billion, it is equivalent to raising interest rates by X percent. I'm not sure that they have ever really been able to work that out.
Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's in London writing the Federal Reserve. This is easy compared to where we're going. Liberation Day. What is it? What happens? Nobody knows. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.